You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Episode 8, come on, Road to 20 is still on, baby. Today, we have our first ever university professor on the show. But before I get into that, do me a favor, why not rate the podcast, huh? If you like it, go rate it on Apple or Spotify. And if you don't like it, then to be honest, I don't know why you're here, so leave. For the people that do like it though, subscribe to Rishi Karada on YouTube and add me on Instagram at Rishi Karada as well. Anyway, today we have Professor Justine Gubar. Professor Gubar is a television producer and journalist currently serving as the Director of Broadcast Operations for the New York Roadrunners Club. She previously led the Sports Emmy Awards at the National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences. And in 2020, she won 2 Telly Awards for producing virtual sports Emmy ceremonies. She is currently an NYU professor at the School of Professional Studies. She teaches courses like Research Strategies for College, Sports Business Practicum, and more. Why is storytelling a cornerstone of our success? In today's episode, we dive into the art of telling your story and how mastering the skill can transform your professional relationships. We'll explore why storytelling is essential for making lasting impressions, what makes a story compelling, and how to present yourself with confidence to important individuals. Learn how to craft authentic narratives while overcoming the fear of vulnerability, and discover how your future story can be the key to building a meaningful and impactful career. Join us today for practical advice on using storytelling to market yourself effectively and make your mark on the world. So, with that being said, please help me welcome Professor Justine Gubar. Why is it important to be able to tell stories effectively?
Well, it's easy. Stories are interesting. People remember them. People want more of them if you're doing it right. Not to get too prolific, but stories resonate. Like, literally, since the beginning of time, people have been telling stories and remembering them. I mean, if you look at, no matter what your religion, if you're religious, if you're not, there are religious texts like the Bible, the Torah, the Quran, that just tell stories and have resonated with people for thousands of years. I mean, we have a storytelling tradition, no matter religion, society. It's just part of human nature. And I think if you tap into that in terms of athletics, professional and personal development, you'll be able to sort of go farther because you'll refine your message and it will resonate with people and make people remember you and respond to you.
Yeah, there's this element of stories, I think, that you bring up a lot in your class, which is, it's also a way to market ourselves, even whether it's in a job interview or we're approaching a girl or a guy, we're inclusive. But if we're approaching someone we like, the way we market ourselves and sell ourselves is through stories. But the issue I normally encounter is, how do I tell a good story? What actually makes a story good?
Great question. A structure is important. And what I mean by structure is pretty simple. Beginning, middle, and end. You got to go somewhere. There's a difference between a list of notes and a story with a purpose and a structure. So that's one. And number two is detail. Memorable details that get lodged in people's minds and they can visualize it. They can relate to it. I often say to students, and maybe you've received some of this feedback, I can't exactly remember, show me, don't tell me. Mm. Like, consider the work we do in class. And I don't know if you want me to give background on the class we share together at this moment or not.
You can give a general overview.
All right, so you have been my student all semester in our class called Sport Business Practicum. And it's a core class that the Tisch Institute of Global Sport developed to help students develop themselves as working professionals and understand how to market themselves, create professional materials from your resume to your LinkedIn to websites to explain who you are, what you're interested in, what your skills are, what your experiences are, and what you can contribute to any working environment you're a part of. And while it's professional development, there's a lot of personal development as well, because the best LinkedIns, the best websites, even the best resumes, which are pretty cut and dry, resonate the most with people when you're telling an intentional story, when there's a brand throughout, when you really put in the effort to determine your values, your goals, your strengths, your weaknesses, and figure out a compelling way for them to come across. So now I totally forget what you asked me. Do you remember what the question was? I diverted to give the background of class.
What makes a story actually good?
Okay, so we strive to tell good stories about ourselves in class. And what I often say is show, don't tell. Mm. And I'll have students in their professional materials sort of talk around the edges and say, I'm a devoted and passionate sport management major, and I'm interested in event management and global sport, but they're talking broad concepts and it's not detailed and it's not individual and you're not tapping into someone's emotional center with that type of language. The way you tap into someone's emotional center, the way you make someone feel something about you is by getting specific, by getting individual. And that's what I try and draw out of students when they get the feedback, you know, show me, don't tell me.
Mm. So you highlighted two parts of a story, the first one being structure, the second one being specific details. Let's start with structure, because I want to break down that. What exactly should a structure, or if maybe there's not even a set structure, but what are the components of a good structure in a story?
Compelling beginning. You want to draw people in and get them to stick around. It can be a docuseries on a streaming service. It can be your resume. Something we've discussed in class is that a potential employer a recruiter spends no more than 10 seconds sussing up your resume. So you have a really brief moment to get them interested and get them to stick around. Same thing for when you sit down to watch Netflix at night. Like, what is it that gets you to say, I don't know if I can see myself watching six episodes of this. I'm going to move on to the next thing. What gets you to stay? What gets you to interest? What gets you interested? What gets you to commit potentially the next 6-8 hours of your life to watch an entire series? So compelling beginnings are really important. And in sports television, where I've spent a lot of my career outside of teaching, you know, the questions become, what's your opening shot? What action shots are you showing to draw people in? Or what's your opening soundbite? You know, what are you going to share with the audience? What are you going to tell the audience that will draw them in and make them want to learn more? So that's a really important part of structure, compelling beginning. In terms of middle, where are we going on this journey together? And are you hitting all the beats you need to hit? Giving people just enough information. You can often give people too little information, too much information. Are you presenting your best material? And are you complete enough? And then your ending. Is your ending predictable? Is it helping your audience learn something, bringing them to an unexpected place? How are they going to feel when they come away from your story? Where will they be emotionally? Will they be happy, sad, angry, satisfied, unsatisfied, intellectually satiated? All those things go into creating a compelling ending. And by and through that, a compelling story.
I almost correlate the first beginning, compelling beginning of a story to maybe a first impression in a conversation, in an interview. How can we make that first impression stand out while being consistent with the overall message of our story? Because stories can be told in all kinds of scenarios, whether, like I said, I'm approaching that person I like, or whether I'm going for that job I want. You still want a story that you want to get across. It's still context dependent. So how can I still make a good first impression while that first impression is still consistent with the overall message I'm trying to give?
Well, great question. And in fact, little preview, this is going to be something we're going to be working on in class tomorrow. First, I want to say, be yourself, be authentic. If you sound like you're faking it, if you sound like you have an agenda, people know that stuff. So be yourself. And the other piece of it is, be intentional. Like, think about what your message is, what you want to say, what you would do in this type of situation, what you would do in this type of situation. In terms of the lens of our class that we're in together, never walk into a job interview unprepared. You know the environment you're going into, know the people you're talking to, understand as much as you can about the potential workplace you're applying into. Do your homework, do your research. So in terms of making that first impression, be intentional, but then deliver it from the heart, I would say.
What does that mean, be intentional?
Means, even if you're going to wing it, because you can't predict every situation you're going to be in. We talk about elevator pitches in class, right? I think we've addressed that. Mm. You get into an elevator, you're standing across the elevator from a CEO of a company, of a startup that you're actually really familiar with and interested in. You didn't plan for that. You didn't know that'd be happening, but now's your opportunity. It's just you and this person in the elevator, and it's a tall building. You got a lot of time. What are you going to say? How are you going to handle it? You may not know the exact words, but you may have a framework that you know, when I want to share something about myself, this is what I'm going to tap into when it comes to the working world. So being intentional is understanding your strengths, understanding what you have to offer, understanding the best ways to communicate about them, understanding stories you can tell related to these. You have all these tools, and then you get in a situation and you know how to use these tools. You know how to tap into them. And that's what I hope to get across in class. You know, we've talked about star stories. Do you remember what star stories are?
hold on. The result is the last one. Oh, you gotta remind me.
Oh, you gotta memorize this. Situation, task,
action, result.
Action, come on. Result. Yes. If you walk around, as I said in class a few weeks ago, having two star stories about yourself in professional or academic environments in your back pocket, so you can tell the story, it doesn't sound rehearsed, you're excited to share it because it's authentic and it's really something that happened to you and you want to share with people, like that's a great way to present yourself. So little preview for you, come to class tomorrow with your two star stories.
All right, I'll do that. And I love the elevator pitch idea. It's links in with a star concept, but I love it so much because it tests our ability to sell ourselves and market ourselves in a very short period of time, because no one has the time to actually listen for an hour or for our stories. We love stories, but I might be wrong. I don't want to listen to someone's story for an hour. I want to know why they matter in a minute. And Vin Jang, who's a communications expert, he talks about the fact that people are often struggling with telling stories, not because they're actually bad at telling the stories, but because they're bad story collectors. They don't collect stories. So how can we, in our free time, in any setting, non-professional, professional, collect stories actively?
Well, that is another good question out of you. And I have a couple of disparate thoughts on that. One, the best way to collect stories are familiarize yourself with other stories and see how they resonate with you. Like I teach a documentary class, and one of the things I say to students is read stories, read books, read magazines, read. And they look at me and say, isn't this a film class? But if you understand good stories from reading, that will totally inform your abilities as a filmmaker. And I think that idea applies here. So know good stories, read stories, see stories, watch films, watch television, docuseries, limited series. Go to live theater. Take in good stories. You'll understand what resonates with you more so. You'll see different structures. You'll be exposed to uses of language, uses of visuals. So that's one way to collect stories for sure. Number two is understand the power of detail and what goes into telling good stories. I think I might have told this in class, but I have maybe 100 students who pass through my classroom each academic year, give or take, sort of depends. So, and I've been doing this for about 5 years now, so I don't remember everyone's names. Mm. It's a tall order, but I remember interesting details about people. There's this one woman who took my class a couple years ago. I think it was a pandemic, or maybe not. At this point, I can't remember her name. I can't remember her face, but the detail, and she was lovely. It's no knock on her by any means, but the one detail I remember about her was embroidery was her hobby, and she created a small business out of it. And that was so memorable. It was so unique. You could almost feel like the feel of embroidery when you start talking about it and thinking about the craft of it. And I'll always remember her as the embroiderer in my class. And that's a testament to a great detail. You'll probably be the podcaster.
I appreciate that. I'll try my best. I do love that idea, though, that we're remembered by stories and not by specific details. I had Parmitha Kodkar, who's a self-image coach, on the podcast. She helps women be more confident, and let's say they're going on a date. And I found this really interesting. She said that most women, when they first come to her, when they're going on a date, she found this ridiculous, but they often say their negatives as almost like a warning sign. And those details are the ones that stick with the males on the date, saying, like, those are the negatives that they're selling. And they often come out with a negative looking story. So how do we enhance our positives to make a positive looking story?
Well, think positive and commit to your positives. I often write an email and I'll realize that the first line is super negative because that's where my brain went first, or I was a little bit angry, or I have a student telling me why they couldn't do the assignment, and my reaction is that's total BS and what you need to know. And so I find, like, if I just get rid of that first line, it makes the email way more accessible, less emotional, less negative, probably more relatable, less authoritarian for the other person. I think it serves me better when I do that. But yeah, lean into the positivity. You know, you are your thoughts. Like, your thoughts manifest yourself. Like, if you're feeling unhappy, not confident, unsure, inauthentic, it's hard to cover that up. Maybe to a certain extent you can, but after a while that's just gonna come through.
And that comes out in your stories. So delivering the story is as much as important as the story itself.
Absolutely. I mean, you first piece is figure out what your story is. You know, when we say in class, all right, what's your star story? Which clearly you promptly forgot. you figure it out in your head. Maybe you write it down. Maybe you speak into your phone. I don't know how you organize your thoughts, but you get the idea. But you're not done. That's why we work on so many presentations in class. That's why, for example, when you're at your site experience, you're doing a video log rather than just writing a little reflection. Mm. Presentation is part of the game, like it or not. I mean, in the workplace, how many meetings do I go to? How many presentations do I give? How many decks do I have to prepare and share with my colleagues? You know, it's not only having the goods, so to speak, it's sharing the goods. And think about, like, the video and film world that I am a part of. There are certain people you can listen to forever. They're great orators. They're great speakers. They're great conversationalists. There are other people you tune out pretty quickly.
And what are the characteristics that don't make you tune out, that make you great at storytelling?
Well, I think some of that is individual to the listener, for sure. Clarity of language. You know, skip the likes, the ums. We call them garbage words. Physical presence, for sure. You know, when you're on an online platform like this, looking directly into the camera, being centered up, having a professional background, not distracting, making sure your clothes, your presentation is in line with the message you're delivering, and the confidence that your voice exudes. Make sure you believe in what you're saying. I often listen to, there are times when not only am I listening to what my students are saying, but I'm listening to how they're saying it. And some of them will sound unsure of themselves. Some of them will sound overly sure of themselves. Delivery and belief in what you're saying, commitment to what you're saying, authenticity to what you're saying, you can hear it. It really comes across.
But is confidence, are you trying to say confidence, obviously not you're trying to say, but in my head, is confidence loudness? Is it, when you say it's a belief to your delivery, how do we display that?
Good question. It's not loudness, because that's just aggression without power. It's sort of the difference between aggression and assertiveness. Assertiveness is having power. Aggression's more like you don't have true power, so you're trying to compensate with strength, which could be, you know, physical intimidation, could be overmodulation of voice, of tone. But confidence, as you like to say, it's a vibe. Definitely a vibe.
So then how do we practice better storytelling or presenting or speaking?
Good question. Reps, for sure. Intention. Understanding what you want to say, what you want to get across. Practicing it. So, again, not that it's rehearsed, but that you can deliver what your goal is in any given situation. So instead of maybe writing out, think of it this way, 6 different sentences when you go into that job interview. Because if you just recite a memorized 6 different sentence, unless you're a great actor, it's probably going to sound a little crappy, right? But if you had 6 bullet points that had that must get in content, and you had that piece of it memorized, and then you just told your story more conversationally, but committed to getting those 6 different pieces in, it's probably going to sound a lot more natural and ultimately a lot more confident.
So then going back to, let's say, the elevator pitch then, right? So we've got the delivery on point, but then what I think is really interesting is the framing of it, for example, because I think the framing matters, tell me if I'm wrong, it depends on the context. And I think the way we deliver our story can often change the perspective of the story, but how do we actually frame it properly to fit our needs in the context? So for example, I have a set story that I want to tell, but I'll use the 2 examples that I said, right? Whether it's I'm on a date versus I'm in a professional interview, I could still say the same story that about myself, but how do I frame it to fit the needs?
Well, depends what the needs are. I use the phrase a lot, read the room, understand the expectations of the environment you're in, understand who you're dealing with, and understand your goals. What do you want to come away with? Chances are, if you're on a date, you probably want the person to come away with a sense of who you are and what you're interested in, more so than skills and experience, like you would want to convey in a more professional environment. Perhaps there's more vulnerability involved when you're on a date. So really understanding the specifics of your situation is important. And I think delivering what you want to share through the lens of what the other person needs is important. One thing I know we've talked about in class is if you're pitching yourself for a job, present yourself as what you can do for the company, not what the company can do for you. Mm. Face it, they're getting a lot of entry level, rising employee resumes. They have a lot of choice. They have the power, you know, and the NBA posts a job, 30,000 people apply and they have a lot of choice. So the person who comes to them and says, here's what working for the NBA can do for me. I want to be a GM. I want to earn, you know, $1 million salary by the time I'm 26, you know, whatever. It's not really the priority of the NBA. The priority of the NBA is whatever the job posting is about. It's about social media marketing. The priority of the NBA in that scenario is about innovative approaches to social media and upping engagement and understanding the game, the team, the league in a way, the players in a way to be able to convey stories about them through social media to the audience. So it's important in a work environment to present yourself with what you think you can contribute to that work environment.
And I'm assuming that it goes for a lot of situations, even outside of professional, you still want to frame your story in a way that can resonate with the other person, like the audience.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You want to meet that person's needs, so you need to understand their needs.
And can I ask, what would be your advice on finding the right story to tell?
Story you feel good about, a story you think is relevant, a story that you've experimented with and you've gotten good feedback. You've seen people relate to the story. You've seen people respond emotionally to the story. You've seen people respond with a deeper understanding of you from hearing the story. Practice, keep trying it out.
Yeah, so it seems about trial and error, and you use the word reps, which I quite like, just getting in those reps of storytelling. I think an issue that I often come with is, let's say I have a story in mind, I often sometimes feel vulnerable while telling a story of myself. Like, it can be hard to get some details across to someone you don't know. You don't know how they're going to judge you, how they're going to perceive you. So how do I actually get over that fear of vulnerability?
Well, you know, vulnerability is not a terrible thing.
Okay.
At points. And it's hard. I mean, we talk about in job hunting and professional development, being confident, but there's a line. You don't want to be overconfident. You don't want to be arrogant. You don't want to oversell yourself. You don't want to undersell yourself. It's hard to know exactly where that line is. I think the more experience you have, the more you'll come to understand these things, the more conversations you have. the more opportunities you have to have job interviews, have networking conversations, the more you begin to understand people's responses. I do believe if you're telling a genuine story that really happened to you and you believe in the point of that story, hopefully you will feel less vulnerable about sharing something like that.
I think what I've also realized is over the years, because I had a massive issue when I was younger that I always had a fear of not fitting in. So I would always maybe cover up some details of a story or add in some fake details of a story that would maybe help me get perceived better by the people around me. But I often realized that I would end up leaving that conversation, leaving that discussion, feeling worse off, and maybe even worse off than the feeling of being rejected when I told a good story. Because I think telling an authentic story and being rejected is still better than telling a fake story and being accepted.
Absolutely. And chances are, if you tell an authentic story and you get rejected, whatever that means, it's probably about the other person. It's not you. You know, it's probably that you didn't have what they needed for that job. It wasn't personal, but they needed someone with 5 years of Salesforce experience or whatever it might be. That has nothing to do with you. It's not a shortcoming of you. Either you have that or you don't. It's factual. And by the way, in terms of not fitting in, everybody feels like they don't fit in at some point. And if they say they don't, then they're just covering it up, or they haven't faced that, or they don't even know where to begin to understand that.
What's your experience with that? If I don't know if you want to speak on it, but the fact that
about
you said
not
right
fitting
away,
in,
yeah.
Oh my God, where should I begin? Well, first of all, so I've had like physical examples of not fitting in. I remember I once went to day camp as a kid. I have no idea how old I was. And I was placed in the boys group because they thought Justine was Justin and a boy's name. Like, well, now, decades later, that happens to me every other name. Every other day, someone mangles my first name. But as a kid, that was traumatizing because that is the thing like teasing is made out of. So I totally felt like I didn't fit in because I didn't fit in. I was a girl in the boys group. I didn't want to be in the boys group. I didn't want to stand out. I didn't want to be the only one. It was terrible. And then they figured it out, but I felt awful. And, you know, I've always been attuned to that. Like, I think I say that at the beginning of class. Help me pronounce your name correctly. I'm someone whose name has been mangled all my life. It's sort of traumatizing. It's annoying. You wind up, you know, you meet someone for the first time at the age of 35, they mispronounce your name. And, you know, your response is, come on, you loser. And they made one mistake, but you're bringing in decades of trauma over something like that. So I try and be sensitive to my students. Then I also get it into my head. Okay, I don't think I know how to pronounce a student's name. So you psych yourself out and then you're terrified to say it one way or the other. And then it's just a jumble of awkwardness, but it's just coming from the heart. I'm trying to acknowledge people for who they are. Like, when I go into Starbucks and give my name to get a coffee, I learned years ago, they don't do well with my first name. So my official coffee name is Tiffany. Tiffany.
Oh, everyone's got an official coffee name. Yeah, yep. Mine's Dan.
Yep, exactly. Tiffany. And now I have friends who just call me Tiffany. It's an inside joke. So that's one piece of not fitting in. I would also talk about, I've worked in sports television for 3 decades at this point. I worked at ESPN when there were only two networks, ESPN One, ESPN Regular, and ESPN Two had just started. So way before ESPN became what it is today, not a lot of women, not a lot of, shall we say, orientation and concerned with gender equity in the workplace, harassment, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, it was a little bit wild, like the Wild West back then. So I certainly felt like I was not part of the in-group in that situation. And it's been that way for a lot of my career as a woman in sports.
So you just explained that you were not fitting in because you were put in this group that you didn't fit into. Have you ever, because I have, the reason I ask is, have you ever gone into a group that you wanted to fit in, even though you didn't? It's almost like a fear of missing out. Like, when I was a kid, and especially, I still do it now, but I'm trying to get over it. When I find a cool group of people that I like, or even some of my friend groups that I used to hang out with, I used to always sort of change my authentic self. And there was always this gut-wrenching feeling that I had. And finally, I realized, I'm like, bro, maybe it's not you. Maybe it's just the group you're hanging out with. And they're not terrible people, but maybe they're just not authentic to you. And once you get out of that, and once I'm slowly getting out of it, I'm slowly realizing that I am feeling better, and maybe I'm not with the group that I wanted to be, sort of in the cool sort of hierarchy group, but I just feel better about myself.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, you see groups that you want to be part of and you deem them cool. Well, what really makes them cool exactly? Mm. You know, and is it worth you putting all this effort to be cool like them? Like, I don't know. I mean, high school is a lot more recent for you, but what made people cool? Like expensive clothes, expensive things? I don't know. Like houses where the parents weren't around so everyone could hang out? Like in retrospect, none of that's all that important.
Mm. I don't know. Right? I feel like we're biologically wired to socially connect with people. And mm-hmm. So when you see a big group of people that are connecting with themselves, all you want to do is just join that group to connect. And maybe it's because I'm impatient. I don't know. But
do you really want to join every group? Do you really want to connect with every group? There are a lot of groups I know I want no part of.
But how do you identify, what is the feeling that you have when you've found the right group and that you are truly authentic to you, that your story actually resonates with the people that you're hanging out with or connecting with?
Well, I think that's sort of the meaning of life, finding the people you connect with and getting to spend time with them.
Mm.
And how do you do that? I think you just figure out who you are. You know, like in the beginning of class, for example, we set out SMART goals. We figured out our goals halfway through class, or actually towards the end of class, or you did it early on. We read Man's Search for Meaning, which really was about your personal values. You know, the more you figure out your goals, your values, the more you seek out people who prioritize the same things you do. And I think that's where you get that really great connection.
That was an awesome podcaster pivot, by the way. Like that, the pivot to Man's Search for Meaning, even I didn't see that coming. But I actually want to talk about it.
Sure.
What is the impact of Man's Search for Meaning? Because like you said, we're in a sports business class. We're working on our LinkedIns. So why does Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl actually help us in our class?
Well, a couple things. Remember I said the way to collect stories is read stories? Here's a story that you probably came into class not expecting to read, but it opened your eyes in an unexpected way, for sure. I mean, we read this book every semester. I've gotten really interesting reactions from students. Your reaction was one of them. You were really excited to have that book as an assignment. You handed in your assignment early. You found the book really meaningful, if I can summarize what I took away as your response. I've had students say to me, I hate reading, but God, I really loved reading this book. Mm. I'm like, that's great. You probably don't want to tell your professor you hate reading, but okay. You know, students come away surprised about the impact of that book. I've also had students say to me, this is a class about sports. What does this have to do with sports? And to me, my response to that is, I think you might be missing the whole point of our entire program. Mm. Because, you know, we're an institute of global sport. We look at the world through the lens of sport. Have you taken Professor Hollander's class yet?
I have.
Yeah. You explained to me how that reflects an answer to what does this book have to do with sports?
No, it makes sense. And when it comes to Viktor Frankl's book, his middle name is E. That's why I said E.
Okay. But, like you were saying Victory.
No. Viktor space E. Frankl. His book. Okay. Obviously, you got my takeaway on it, but what was, if you had to say your biggest takeaway, what would it be?
My personal takeaway?
Yeah.
Or how it impacts students?
No, I would probably your personal takeaway.
That it's really important to figure out what's important to you and pursue those things. Mm. And figure out how you can pursue them. And it may not be in the obvious way. I mean, here was a guy who was locked up in a concentration camp fighting for his life. Mm. But he managed to find hope in certain ways.
I will say that book, and I told you I was going to read that book, which is why I did the project early. It's not like I'm like a nerd that just hands in projects early, but I was reading that book already. Because it was recommended to me by either a friend or one of the podcasts I listened to. And I took probably a quote from almost every four pages, I'd like to say. Because to anyone out there, I know Professor Grubauer suggests this book to our class. But I think if you really want to read a fascinating story, this is the book to read. I'm not even saying that just to like sell this book. I'm not even sponsored. There's not even a sponsor. I mean, I want to be sponsored, but I don't know how you get sponsored by the book. But that is a book that you just got to read. Maybe you take something away from it. I don't know. But for me, that was a fascinating book. And in terms of your takeaway, which is do what's important to you, I think that comes back to what you were saying about being authentic with our stories. And maybe, tell me if I'm wrong, but maybe the best way of also collecting stories is making the story for ourselves in the future, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's sort of an underlying question to the practicum class. Like, what's your story for the future? And it can be really granular and specific to sort of the coursework and the major and the industry. Like, my story is I want to work in event management at global sport. Or maybe it's broader than that. Maybe it's not specific to one type of job. Maybe it's my story is I'm a creative and I want to tell stories through visual means.
Can I ask you, do you think stories about the future can be told in the present tense? Like, because you just said I'm a creator, but let's say you haven't established a creative credibility in the past. Can you still acknowledge a future story as a present?
Like, can you call yourself a creative when you haven't created a lot of things?
Exactly.
I think so.
How come?
Because you know what you value. You know what resonates with you, what you're drawn to. what you appreciate, what you relate to, what inspires emotion in you. That's half the game.
Mm. So do we establish the message of our story first rather than finding a story, then finding its message?
I think it depends.
What do you mean?
Well, I think it depends where you're at. Maybe you have the tangible thing, but you don't understand the underlying principles beneath it. Maybe the woman who did embroidery in my class knew she liked doing embroidery and then realized this could be part of her career. This was a priority. Being creative, creating something tangible was important to her. Are there universal themes related to something you're engaged in, something you're doing? Or the reverse, you have universal themes that you know you're committed to. Maybe you're a social justice warrior. Maybe social justice is a passion of yours. Trying to pivot into the working world, what's a way you can tap into this commitment of yours and make it a professional goal for yourself? There are many different answers to that question. We have students who are working in their site experience in mission-driven organizations. One of our organization works to eradicate sexual misconduct in sports. One of our organizations is committed to bringing free organized sports for school children from underserved communities. There are ways to package your passion and your activism into a professional experience and potentially a job.
I like that. And you just made me think, Alex Hormozi says that every single time he gets into a struggle or confronts an obstacle, he says, it's okay because this will be the story that I tell. So if we don't have stories to tell right now, that's okay, because then we can go take action and create stories that we can one day tell. I love that. That's a great insight. And I've been doing this with all my guests to finish it off. I think this would be awesome, especially with a professor at NYU. What is the best advice you've ever been given?
Good question. I don't feel like I've necessarily gotten a lot of good advice over the years.
Okay. Well, let me ask you then, what is the worst advice you've ever been given? And maybe the best once you think of it.
These are hard. You should have prepped me for this. Can I just tell you advice I give to people?
Go on. That would be as great.
Thank you for that. I think if you're stuck on something, you know, in the context of our class, you're trying to figure out your values. You want to figure out what type of job you want to commit to this summer. Sometimes I think the best way to answer bigger questions like that are to get out of your head and to get away from directly answering those questions and put yourself in a completely different situation. And there are two great ones. One, go into nature, go hiking for the day, take your mind and your body somewhere totally out, somewhere totally different. You'll be surprised where your mind can go. And it's not just hiking. You can go ice skating in Central Park all day. That's one. The other one is go do volunteer work. Go commit to someone else besides yourself. A couple of weeks ago, I committed for 2 hours to help give out clothing to migrant families. Just getting outside yourself, seeing the lives of other people can be deeply meaningful. And really put you in unexpected places and make you see the world and yourself a little bit differently.
So that's the change in perspective is what potentially can help us find our values.
Absolutely.
Love it. Well, Professor Gubar, thank you for being on today. It means the world that you said yes. And I'll see you in class tomorrow.
Of course. See you tomorrow. Thanks.